Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. My website is www.jbsba.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It's also smallbusinessadvocate.com or jimblasingame.com. Pick one out you can remember and have a go at that one. And when you get there, you can find thousands of archives, thousands of articles, lots of good information that you can read and listen to there at our website, including finding out more about our good friend and some of the outstanding interviews he's left with us over the years. David Dossie, who is our guest this half hour. David is our intellectual property attorney in the Brain Trust, and he's also my intellectual property attorney for our business. David Dossie, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. Glad to be back.
It's good to have you back as always, David. I know one of the things you want to talk about today is the changing of the Supreme Court. Now, as an intellectual property attorney, why is that an important thing for you?
Well, you know, the Supreme Court ultimately shapes the direction that law is heading. And granted, the Supreme Court deals with a lot more social issues and, you know, a lot of business issues. Many of them, you know, it's hard not to touch on intellectual property nowadays. Mm-hmm. And as you know, last month they came down with the Grokster ruling,
right.
And obviously that affects intellectual property greatly.
Tell the audience, and by the way, folks, before you get in, I want you to tell us about the Grokster ruling in a minute. But before we do that, folks, there is no part of our lives anymore that's not touched in some way with intellectual property. And with some and also with some kind of technology, some element of technology, which is basically part and parcel to intellectual property in most cases. And so David, basically anything that the Supreme Court does will have some element of intellectual property in it, won't it?
Sure.
So tell us about the Grokster ruling.
Well, you know, last month, the Supreme Court came down actually with a unanimous decision in the Grokster case that had to do with peer-to-peer file sharing and held that the...
Now, sometimes some people might not know what that means. Tell us what peer-to-peer file sharing is.
Well, it's the new version of Napster where people can get online and trade software or exchange software without actually downloading it on the Grokster or Streamcast computer equipment, so
right.
It goes right from peer to peer without actually being hosted on the manufacturer.
The low-tech way of peer-to-peer sharing, folks, is just me telling you a story.
Right.
And you taking that story and giving it to somebody else. Now we're talking about someone's intellectual property that is contained in a file that can be transferred from one peer to another peer.
Right. And the court held that, you know, when your product is largely put forward for infringing uses, that the manufacturer of the product can be held liable for copyright infringements committed by the users of their product, or in this case, their peer-to-peer file sharing software.
The question was, can the manufacturer of software, of a capability, or equipment, or whatever, that allows primarily, and its primary purpose is to allow people to infringe on someone's copyright. If that's the main thrust of that invention, then the people who have that invention can be held liable. Is that right, David?
Correct.
Right.
And most people felt, you know, that was a huge victory for like the Motion Picture Association and the recording industry. But for the technology people, the people mm-hmm. developing the technology, you know, that they are fearful now that they have some liability for their end users' actions with their product.
So you might not be able to be liable if you make a weapon. But if you make a weapon that has the sole purpose of you know, hurting law enforcement officers or whatever, that would be different.
Right. Right.
And so in this case, for example, Grokster, tell us what Grokster's capability specifically does.
Well, you know, like I said, it's the peer-to-peer aspect, but the problem that the recording industry and the Supreme Court had with it is it's overwhelmingly used for illegal copyright mm-hmm. infringement, and they even.
But is that Grokster's fault? And I guess the other side, the winning side, proved that's the case. Stand by, Dave. We're going to come back and talk about this some more. And I think David also wants to get into the Kelo v. New London case that I've been talking about lately, the private property issue that we talked about earlier, the eminent domain issue we talked about last week. He wants to talk about that too. 20 till, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a good visit with our good friend David Dossie. He is an intellectual property attorney. We used to call them patent attorneys, but that doesn't really cover it anymore. Now we have to talk really more in terms of intellectual property, because where you and I might not be an inventor in a classic inventor standpoint, inventor that creates something that needs to be patented, we are creating, you and I are creating intellectual property every day, and most of it needs to be protected, and therefore we need a little help with that, and that's what David does. He helps me, that's for sure. And David, by the way, I'll just say this on the air. We really enjoy working with you and your organization.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Jim.
Give us that website, please.
It's www.invention-protection.com.
Yeah, and folks, if you haven't seen an intellectual property website, I encourage you to check that one out. And by the way, David and I have never met face-to-face, and yet we still do business. So you can do it too. David, we're talking about the Supreme Court rulings, how important the Supreme Court makeup is to the future of, well, in this case, of our intellectual property. Did you agree with the Grokster ruling where they ruled that a company that invents or and makes available a product that's typically largely used to steal intellectual property, that company could be held liable? Did you agree with that?
Yes, I think it's got to be that way. When it's primarily, the purpose is primarily for infringing other people's intellectual property, you've got to put up some sort of protections.
Where's Napster right now? Is it out of business?
I believe so.
It's completely. I was thinking, right. I saw a little resurgence recently or something, that they were coming back. But that's basically what Napster was doing, wasn't it?
Right. It is.
And they were shut. They were basically shut down. But you know, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, the Bible says, I guess, David. And so if we live by the Supreme Court rulings in these cases, you know, we don't always know that they're going to rule in the right way.
Right.
As we found in the Kelo versus New London case.
Right. Yeah, I your newsletter article yesterday I thought was excellent, and it particularly timely since this is what we're going to be discussing today.
Well, Sandra Day O'Connor, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman to ever be on the Supreme Court, is retiring as soon as they can find a replacement that can be confirmed. We're pretty sure that Chief Justice Rehnquist is going to be retiring soon. I mean, the man is an incredible patriot, and I'm so inspired by him, David. If you've seen him doddering around lately, he's just such a stalwart, just such a great man,
sure.
And I admire him so much. But he's ill, and it's he ought to go be with his family, I think.
Right.
And I mean, I'm telling you, Justice Rehnquist, you know, take a break. But he's going to be being replaced pretty soon, and that means that there may be three confirmation processes very soon. One for the Chief Justice, and one to fill his slot, and one to fill Senator O'Connor's slot.
Right. And then John Paul Stevens is, you know, he's up there. He's
I don't think he's going anywhere.
Old. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. I mean,
no one saw O'Connor coming this quickly, you know.
Well, actually, you know, she'd been telegraphing it just a little bit over the last year, I think. But I was surprised. I admit I was surprised, but she'd kind of been telegraphing it. But so what do you think, you know, The concern that I have with regard to intellectual property, David, in the Supreme Court, is that I like market solutions better than I like legal solutions, for the most part. What do you think?
I agree, absolutely. You know, let the businesses fairly fight it out and keep the courts out of it.
By the way, my producer, Jace, just reminded me that Napster is now a pay-for-play site, not a free site anymore. They were offering it for free before. Now you have to pay for it. Which obviously I'm sure the money then winds up back in the pockets of the person who created the intellectual property, the music or whatever it may be. So how much do you think the president is going to think about intellectual property? He's going to think about these kinds of market issues when he nominates Supreme Court judges. How much of that's going to play as opposed to social issues?
Well, you know, I guess the overwhelming consensus is that he's more likely to nominate based upon social issues than he is based upon business issues, because he had such strong supporters from people that have just strong opinions on abortion, gay marriage, affirmative action. And, you know, the president feels a lot of pressure. Now, conversely, obviously, businesses also want him to consider nominees based upon important issues to them: taxation, product liability, punitive damages. And that's where, fortunately, the Chamber of Commerce has really stepped up, and probably in the last decade, and has started lobbying the White House.
Mm-hmm. You mean the U.S. Chamber?
Right.
The U.S. Chamber. And then through the support of local chambers as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, the chambers of commerce are very important conduits, ladies and gentlemen, through which you can make your influence felt in Washington, D.C. And David, I agree with you, and I appreciate you bringing that up. We have a number of people from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce out of Washington on the show on a regular basis, and we like to interview Chamber of Commerce folks from around the country. But chambers, folks, if you would like to have some impact, some influence in Washington, especially on the Supreme Court case, David, I think you'd agree with me, support your Chamber of Commerce.
The Chamber does an excellent job in following the justices' position and informing the White House on which justices are pro-business and which ones aren't.
Right, absolutely. We certainly need pro-business justices. As far as I'm concerned, 10 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. David Dossi is our guest. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend David Dossi, an intellectual property attorney with the firm of Gallagher & Dossi. And he's my intellectual property attorney. And give us your website again, David.
It is invention-protection.com.
And folks, if you're wondering if you have intellectual property that you need to protect, I'm going to go ahead and answer that for you. The answer is yes. So the question is, what are you going to do about that? And that's the reason why you probably ought to check with David or someone like him, someone who does what he does. And David, I'm sure that if somebody wants to have an intellectual property attorney, maybe closer to them if they're on the other side of the continent and they'd like to have somebody they can go by and see, you'd help them find somebody like that, wouldn't you?
Oh, without a doubt. Or even their local bar association could put them in touch with a good
Exactly. But contact. I encourage you to check out David's website. It's not your grandfather's patent attorney website. David, just to, as we wrap up on this Supreme Court issue, the next... A lot of people are going to be, you know, wringing their hands over abortion, over church and state and the Ten Commandments and all that kind of thing. But as you know, those issues are, you know, I mean, I'm interested in those issues, but I'm also interested in the free market rulings. And in this case, this Kelo versus New London case, which I've spoken about a few times in the last couple of weeks, is really troubling. And this is the case where, as you know, David, 115 properties have been condemned in New London, Connecticut, including homes that have been in the families for more than 100 years and small businesses. Those properties have been condemned to be taken, to be compensated. There's to be compensated. They'll be paid for to be purchased through the condemnation case as a result of invoking eminent domain. They'll be taken from those families and those businesses and then sold to other businesses for private development. David, that wasn't the intent of the takings clause in the Fifth Amendment.
Right.
It hasn't
right.
been, from a federal level, it hasn't been for over 200 years now.
Right. You know, everyone thinks eminent domain goes hand in hand with public works projects, not private development.
Right. Well, but the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment has been held at a federal level. And I'm going to tell you why I keep saying federal level in a minute. But it's been held to mean that property can only be taken from you with compensation if it's for public use, not public benefit, David. There's a difference between the public benefit and the public use, isn't there?
Sure.
There's a distinction there, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Now, the reason, David, I've been saying at the federal level is because I actually know of cases at state levels, various state levels, where local municipalities condemned properties, took them from one owner and gave it and sold it to another owner, another private citizen. That is actually happening across the country right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just we're fortunate that Ms. Kelo, you know, decided to fight this.
Right, and she along with these other homeowners. But the thing is the sad news is it really never been tested all that much, I guess. It'd been a long time, perhaps, since it'd been tested in the court, in the federal courts, and up until this last couple of weeks, the decision had been made that the takings clause meant for public use.
Right.
But with this new case, we have Justice Stevens' language where he says, for more than a century, our public use jurisdiction has wisely eschewed rigid formulas in favor of broad latitude in determining what public needs justify the use of the takings power. He basically turned more than 200 years of federal precedent on his head, didn't he? With that language.
There's no doubt that this caught a lot of people off guard.
Yeah. And then, of course, the great quote by Senator Day O'Connor, who wrote for the dissenting side. She said nothing after this ruling. She said nothing is to prevent the state now from replacing any Motel 6 with a Ritz-Carlton, any home with a shopping mall, or any farm with a factory. She'll be quoted. That quote will be ringing for generations to come, won't it, David?
Yes, she couldn't have summarized that more poignantly.
Right.
Well, that's a good case for her to go out on.
Do you think that in the future that some Supreme Court could reverse this ruling?
Without a doubt. You know, with a new appointment coming up, you know, if it's a more conservative justice that's appointed, the whole balance of the court could shift. And
right.
It's not just on social issues like the gay marriage abortion,
right.
But issues like this. You know,
absolutely.
Any of the decisions that were split decisions could be impacted.
I'm going to be looking for pro-business justices myself, David. I know you are, too. Thank you, David, for being here. Good job today. Give us your website one more time.
It's invention-protection.com.
Thanks, David. See you next
thank
time.
You.
David Darcy, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.